Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is Acadiana's number one sports station, 1037 The Game. Streaming live on 1037thegame.com and on the 1037 The Game mobile app. It's game day, and we're going behind the glass with the famous CD.
I don't know how to put this, but kind of a big deal.
The new guy, Blaine Viator.
Hey, boy. Give me some water.
Cody Schutz. It's the producers on 1037 The Game.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back.
And welcome, everyone, to the must-listen-to Saturday morning sports talk show in Acadiana, and dare I say, the entire damn state. The producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game and 1037thegame.com. Live, as always, from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. From the roof to the roots of Acadiana, they can take care of your roof unlike anybody else. 237 Roof, 237-7663. That's the number for Lafayette Roofing. But if you want to call us up on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, it is wide open for the first half hour of the show, because we got all kinds of stuff to talk about. 337-706-0111, 337-706-0111. You can call us up and talk to us about anything and everything, because we got a lot to talk about. Obviously, I think the biggest story of them all, and we're going to lead right into it before I give you the idea of what we got coming up on tap in terms of a guest list. But first, you know, we got a special guest in studio after being away for a week. That's our good brother Blaine Viator. What's going on, my man?
Oh, not too much, man. Good to be back after being out last week. Took in a little LSU spring game. Excited to see that. And good to be back, though.
I'm trying to remember. Did we have a show do a show 2 weeks ago?
Because yeah, we did.
I feel like that was like the doubleheader where we were cut off for like a half hour or something.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. It's weird. Our show's been very, disjointed the last, month and a half.
Basketball, baseball, all sorts of fun stuff. Right?
All sorts of fun shows right there. We like I said, we got a lot of things to talk about, of course. What's causing all this in Acadiana, and I'd say the entire state of Louisiana, is what's going on with the New Orleans Pelicans, because they have a new general manager. All the reports are coming out saying that former Cavs GM David Griffin is to be the new GM for the franchise. We haven't heard anything official come out right from the Pelicans organization, but that should be coming down the pipeline, I'd hope, in the next few hours. I mean, you think whenever this news kind of comes out from Woj, you're going to get right out in front of it and take care of it in a Friday news dump, right?
Yeah, I mean, whatever he produces is usually true. So
yeah,
we'll take it as gospel from here, but I think it's an interesting hire, right?
Oh, I think it's an interesting hire. I think it's probably the right hire, too, when you really think about it, because of the fact that this is a guy who talked about this, who talked about the Pelicans' future and what they need to be doing going forward. He talked about it a while back, I believe, on the NBA Network, NBA TV. Actually, somebody wanted to put up the video of it, so might as well just air out that sound right now. David Griffin on his plan of what he wants to do with Anthony Davis.
If I was holding their cards, I would probably want to be in a situation where I got at least one young player that projected potentially to be a star, draft picks, an elite role player, somebody that could really further the cause for us as a winner. Because when you're bringing more young kids to the fore, you need those guys to galvanize a group.
And hearing that from David Griffin, sure, it's armchair quarterbacking, sure, it's hypotheticals, but now that he actually does have the job, you can about imagine he's going to try and get the best possible value for Anthony Davis, because I think that's the first order of business when it comes to anybody who is going to take that general manager role after Dell Demps got fired. Thank God he did, because I feel like Dell Demps would have tried to trade Anthony Davis for Ed Monix, Clarence Withers, and a washing machine.
Yeah, I mean, probably, $2 worth of cracklings, a Yoo-Hoo, and maybe half a pound of boudin would have been good.
A Hubix pie?
Yeah.
Honestly, but that probably would be worth it, because that stuff's like gold now.
But, I mean, look, he said it, you know, the best way. Get you a star, somebody that could come in and contribute right away, draft picks to get the younger guys, and role players. Role players are still so important. I mean, even when he built the teams with the Cavs, they had to have those guys that got it done, you know, did the dirty work for LeBron James and company. So I like the way he's thinking, and I think it's set up really, really well for the Pelicans.
Add the fact that he's not going to have to – you brought up LeBron James as a perfect segue. What I want to kind of get up to next is because Griffin, he was dealing with the Cavs for a while. He was part of that championship year. But he also had to deal with LeBron James and his ego because we all know LeBron James, the player. Like, the guy, LeBron James, the guy is fantastic. I wound up seeing something about his his academy or whatever that he has doing really, really well in his first year. That is awesome. Like, LeBron James is the person I have no problem with, but LeBron James is the player, the way he wants to be the player, the coach, the GM, the owner. I was talking about semi-pro just a minute ago. Basically, he wants to be like Jackie Moon and kind of run things from that perspective, being the player, the coach, the GM, the owner, and want to be able to take over everything. You had to deal with that, and maybe that's why Magic Johnson bounced when he bounced. Maybe not. I think there's a lot more to it than that. But with Magic Johnson bouncing out, LeBron James wants to be the guy who controls everything. And whenever you don't have to deal with a diva as much, a diva mentality like we see with LeBron James and probably with Anthony Davis, because the first thing he'll be taking care of is getting rid of Anthony Davis and getting something really, really good. Because now he's on the first plane out of NOLA, probably not long after the draft lottery is all said and done. Either that or after July 1st, once that Kyrie Irving clause happens. Obviously, we'll get Kyrie Irving, but that's whenever you can really start making some headway into getting things done with the Boston Celtics, because I think that's the ideal place for him. I know I was the person who was strongly against it from Jump Street whenever all the rumor and innuendo was coming out, but I'm starting to turn around on it. I'll give you the reason why in a little bit, but I have to say, they have to get rid of him before July 1st.
What are the three most likely landing places for him at this point, you'd say, in order of most likely to least likely?
I think Boston is the most likely. You probably are putting the New York Knicks at, third in terms of 1-3. That's the third most likely. Second, it's very much a question mark because the only thing that the New York Knicks give you is the number one pick, probably, because they seem like the team that's going to be set up for success to get that number one pick according to the draft lottery, which we'll get into a little bit. But again, it's the Boston Celtics that being the top dogs because they offer a lot more value. And I want to run this through the trade machine last night. It gives you the most return on investment because you can probably get Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart. You can probably get a couple really solid pieces. And we talked about this in the past. Really solid pieces that could work out for both parties involved because it helps the Celtics avoid that luxury tax BS.
I mean, in your opinion, though, is Jason Tatum a big enough star? Is he enough star power that you could build around?
I think it's not necessarily going to be all Jason Tatum all day, every day. You look at the entire franchise, the way it's set up, I think they can wind up getting a lot of good things done with Jason Tatum, with Drew Holiday, with a healthy Alfred Payton, those three guys. I feel like could wind up doing some really good things. Of course, Marcus Smart could wind up turning out quite well. But the biggest thing for me is what happens with the NBA draft because of where they're at, where their lot in life is. I don't know if you saw this or not, Blaine, but their lot in life right now is pretty damn good.
Wait, who's that?
The Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean,
the Pelicans, the number 7 spot in the draft lottery, meaning they wind up they have a 26.3% chance of picking in the top 4 spots, and it's a relatively minuscule 6% for a chance to have that number 1 pick and go for Zion Williamson. But I feel like, again, Zion Williamson, 6% chance, I don't like those odds. 26.3 in the top 4, that puts you in prime position to get a guy who I've liked, especially once I saw him in the NBA tournament, put up a triple-double, is Ja Morant from Murray State. I think that would be a great pickup to be able to put alongside Drew Holiday and Jason Tatum.
I mean, he's going number 2, right?
I think that's where he's going to wind up going. I think, but if you get the top 4, you could very well wind up in that 2 spot, or you can wind up probably, you have something to move around where it's like, oh, hey, we want to trade up for this spot, and basically you go from like a number 4. Even if you're just outside of the top 4, you want a number the 5th pick, you can trade that with the number 2 guy because, hey, you can trade with this guy, with this team, because and you wind up giving him a lot more further down the line. I feel like you need to be able to get a guy like Ja Morant. If you have the assets available, that winds up being huge for your franchise. Getting a guy like that, along with a potential trade with the Boston Celtics for a Jason Tatum, a Marcus Smart, what have you.
I mean, I think you get a guy like John Morant, you could build around him with Jason Tatum. That would be the perfect.
That's exactly. Andrew Holiday.
Couple. Right, right. And Holiday. Those would be a good three nucleus to build around. But Jason Tatum by himself just doesn't, you know, do a whole lot for me.
Yeah, but like I say, you're still going to wind up having Drew Holiday. You're going to wind up having Jason Tatum. And again, it's if you get John Morant, that winds up making this thing look really, really good. And imagine if Alvin Gentry and his system, he's able to still be the head coach. Like, we're putting that in underline right here. Still the head coach. Because as of right now, he still is, but we don't know what's going to wind up happening once David Griffin kind of takes over. Is that going to be his second order of business, taking out Alvin Gentry behind the woodshed? But I don't think that's going to wind up happening.
Keep Gentry, man. I like the style of basketball that he likes to play, and I think a guy like John Morant and Jason Tatum and company
and
flourish in that system.
Exactly. You don't have to worry about kind of these injury-prone guys like Anthony Davis. Sure, Alfred Payton's in that list, but, you know, it is what it is. You're only paying him, like, very, very little.
But when he's there, he gives it to you.
Yeah, exactly. When he's there, he gives it to you. He was on with Raymond Parsha III on Thursday's show, and he really wants to kind of get back to being 100% healthy and take care of that hand, because that was one of the biggest things that affected him during the season. If you have Alfred Payton, if you have Drew Holiday, if you have Jason Tatum and John Morant, tell me this team wouldn't be like a 4 or 5 seed in the Western Conference.
I mean, I think they'd probably be close to like 6 or 7. I still think they'd barely, you know, like on the back half of that. And I'm not sure that.
But again, like, you got to think about it. The fact that the landscape of the NBA could be changing after this season with the Golden State Warriors. A lot of contracts are going to be due. You got to think that. And there's no way in hell they can wind up paying all these guys to stay around. Kevin Durant can wind up going over to the East Coast. You don't know where Draymond Green's going to wind up going. There's a lot of things to look forward to when you're looking at the Western Conference, to where they could probably wind up being a top 4 seed in the Western Conference just because of the way how unstable it is, especially at the tippity top of the Western Conference.
I mean, I guess I'd have to see it. We'll have to see how it all plays out.
Oh,
of
course.
I mean, we've seen guys take less to go to Golden State before. You know, I mean, guys want to win championships.
Yeah, but not. I feel like that's not always a given. Because,
I mean, I think Durant's gone, right? That's
Durant's already kind of 1 foot out the door. He's just waiting to get off the tarmac when the season's all said and done, which is going to be entertaining to see what happens
but
there.
I think maybe there's a chance all those other guys stay.
I think Steph Curry stays. I think Steph Curry is loyal to a fault towards Golden State. I think he's going to stay because if you get rid of Draymond Green, I feel like you can probably still – if you get rid of just Draymond Green – If somehow you're able to get Kevin Durant back and get rid of Draymond, that winds up looking like a formidable foe. And also, it helps with the fact you've got your boy Boogie Cousins probably going to wind up staying there as well.
Yeah, we got to see what happens in Los Angeles with the Lakers. What happens in Houston?
Oh God, the smoke show.
There's so many moving parts. I mean. Yeah, I mean, don't count the Lakers out. I know everybody wants to kick them to the curb. I mean, look, they were acting with a part-time GM, Magic Johnson. That was, you know, he was maybe working 20 hours a week over there with that organization.
He
was traveling, playing golf, and doing his own thing. So, I know everybody wants to talk about LeBron pushing him out. I think it was more of the fact that they need somebody in that gig full-time.
It definitely doesn't hurt matters to have somebody like that to get him in place, because that will wind up being a huge deal for the New Orleans Pelicans going forward. To have somebody like that, like a David Griffin, a guy who's not going to have to deal with as many egos, he can actually be the GM. And, you know, here's the best part of this all. What happened yesterday with the news coming out about that, and again, it's not official. We haven't seen anything from the Pelicans website yet, but I'm almost certain it's coming out.
Once Woj says it, man,
it's an endorsement from Gail Benson saying, hey, like, you know how I said a while back, I'm never going to sell the team? This is an endorsement saying, hey, I am all in on the Pelicans succeeding. And you got to think that there is a chance for this to be a successful franchise, especially when you look at how the ratings went, when you look at the top 10 cities that wound up having a lot of views for games on ABC or the four-letter network. They were number 3 in that top 10 list. Tell me that's not amazing, Blaine.
It's pretty surprising for me. You know, I wouldn't say in the South is definitely not basketball country, but
apparently it is.
Apparently, I'm wrong on that note. And, you know, I really thought that Gail might look at moving this team at some point and maybe trying to sell it even.
Oh, I think we were saying that for months.
Yeah, I'm wrong on that aspect as well. But I think in order for this to work, though, you're still going to need more star power and more key names
I think you
to
do,
get people behind.
You do need star power, and I feel like, you know, Ja Morant, he's going to wind up being
right. I think he's a star. Guy who has a potential.
And Jason, also just, Jason Tatum's a name value player.
And this is something that you've brought up previously, you know, how the Saints just embrace the culture of New Orleans. The organization needs to do that. The players need to do that and sink its teeth and really become part of NOLA.
Well, I think now that you've got these, a lot of these guys who have been part of NOLA, and it helps the fact you've got a guy born and raised in New Orleans, going to be a big help right there. Going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break. Come back with more. You're listening to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com.
The producers get you ready for the weekend in their own special kind of way.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Fat. Speak up.
Now, back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com. 337-706-0111 is the number to call if you want to get in on the ARCO Equipment Hotline and talk to us about pretty much whatever you want. We were just talking to some New Orleans Pelicans. We don't mind picking that conversation right back up. But, of course, there's a lot of other stuff to talk about. We've got the Masters. We've got the never-ending Will Wade saga. What is going on there? Obviously, no decision has been made as of yet. I'm almost certain we won't find anything out until probably, like, I'd say middle of next week, like Tuesday or Wednesday of next week.
Yeah, the earliest I'd say, but I think I'm more excited about the red hot Houston Astros, seven in a row,
and like they did it in impressive fashion. We'll talk with James Yasko about that at 11:15. By the way, I didn't give out the guest list to start off the show. You know, it is what it is. Next segment, we'll have, I'm probably mispronouncing this, hope I'm going to get it right, Jack Perotti of the Missourian. He covers Mizzou baseball exclusively, so the guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to that. 11:15, James Yasko, AstrosCounty.com, Lima Time Podcast. The man knows what he's talking about when it comes to that. And then Dave Doyle of MMAJunkie.com. I am so glad to have this guy back on the show. Previewing UFC 236 with Dustin the Diamond Poirier being the main event. Of course, you have another Lafayette native, Alan Joban, in there. So Lafayette's definitely getting covered with that main card.
Yeah, it should be a good fight. I know Dustin's pretty confident at the weigh-in yesterday. So
well,
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, from what I was hearing, he definitely had to cut some weight before. Like I think it was the preliminary weigh-ins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so, yeah, like I said, we'll talk about it off air because I'm gonna keep that behind closed doors, but trust me, yeah, he was having a rush a little bit there to get down. And, you know, that's kind of what happens whenever you, especially when you live down in Louisiana, it's hard to keep that boudin crackles, all that stuff.
It's
like last week you had the Po' Boy Festival, you had the Boudin Festival. It's a challenge to kind of keep it down to the lightweight division.
Yeah, man. And last night, LSU, Missouri, just a wild one up in
Columbia. That was amazing last night. Like, how everything kind of, like, it seemed, especially after the first inning, like, I
42-minute first inning?
Yeah. Well, as soon as I left, like, the 237 Roof Studios to head to Cajun Feet, to head to the Teague, like, I'm driving there. It's already 3-0. I'm like, okay, this is going to be a fun game. LSU's going to wind up just whipping their tail in. And then by the time I get out of my truck, get to the Teague, go up the elevator, set up my laptop, pull up Stat Broadcast, it's already 6-3. I mean, what the hell happened?
Yeah, I mean, well, Zach Hess, you know, had to leave the game.
Yeah, I figured that out later.
And out, and it's the same groin injury that he suffered with in the fall.
Yeah.
So that is some concern moving forward. But Hilliard had to come in, and he wasn't quite ready, and it took him a while to get going.
Well, I don't think too many people are, like, truly ready to kind of, like, come in.
Yeah, by the way.
After, like, eight – with, like, no warm-up.
You got to run on first and second, and you're in the ball game, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just throw eight tosses. I mean, that's tough to do. You know, it had all kind of stuff happen in that inning. You know, pass ball, a couple pass balls, scored runs as well as an error.
So it was definitely pop ball.
It was comical, man. It was pop ball. And then, you know, it was back and forth, and a lot of runs scored, and LSU was able to scratch a run, you know, late. And
Fontenot
came in
10th inning.
I think the important thing, though, from last night
Todd
Peterson came in and had it regained his form and went three innings and then allowed runs. So, That's very good for LSU moving forward. The bad thing is, though, you don't know what's going on with Hess, and you already have a lot of pitchers that are kind of on the shelf for LSU right now.
Yeah.
Marceau's coming back didn't quite go as planned on Tuesday night against the Jags.
Yeah, like I said, you're bringing up Todd Peterson. I mean, I saw this last night. Trey Mongrew brought this up. He's like, maybe this is the game that Todd Peterson gets his mojo back. I'm like, call me when he pinch hits. That's when he gets his mojo back. That's the game where I'm like, Todd Peterson's back.
When he was struggling, man, Tiger Nation on Twitter was just, you know, calling Maneri to just put him in there. Let him swing the stick a little bit. See if that doesn't get him, you know, a little bit of confidence built back up. But going back to the Cajuns, though, you said you went over to the Teague last night. I was really thinking that after last weekend, maybe the Cajuns turned the corner a little bit.
I thought so,
you know?
Too. You know, you beat the best team in the West Division in Arkansas State, and you do it the way that you did. Yes, you lost that first game of the doubleheader. It is what it is. We can move on from that.
Yeah.
But the way that you wound up losing the game against McNeese State, La Tech, and then you kind of C-wrapped the bed 9-2, it was just absolutely rough. And I feel like Tony Robichaud, he put it the best way he possibly could. They're just not doing what it takes to win.
We can look all over around for different excuses, but, you know, we're not doing what leads to winning. And when you don't pitch against a 3-run inning, I'm telling you, you're going to lose. And we've got to come back tomorrow and pitch against a 3-run inning. If we get caught in a tough inning like we did, you got to manage it properly. We didn't manage it properly. You know, we late covering first. We could get out of that with one run, and we don't. And so now what you've got to try to do is that when you lose a game like this, it starts to mount up and fess on you. So you're going to have some serious leadership to overcome all of what this team has gone through. I mean, you put Gunner on the mound, I'm telling you, fully healthy on a Friday night, you wouldn't be asking no question about fire or anything.
It's just frustrating to see what's going on with the Cajuns. Like, they're, as Roe put it as well during that press conference, consistently inconsistent.
I think that's what they're the most consistent doing is being inconsistent. And I mean, there's been at times where they've been dominant, you know, pitching standpoint. There've been times they've been dominant hitting the baseball.
I mean,
and they just can't put it together.
I mean, Perrin's been very hit or miss. Hopefully, and I'm hoping upon hope, we see another great performance from our guy Brandon Young. 13
How
strikeouts
good.
Last
he
Saturday
on short notice.
Oh, 45 minutes
How
short
good
notice.
He,
it was amazing to see him out there, and he was just dealing. Obviously, 13 strikeouts, a little bit much to expect from him, but the dude, I feel like you want to still have another really solid outing and helping out his team, getting the win on this, because they need to do it today. 1 o'clock got moved up.
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, with the weather, they want to move
up. It's going to be counteracting with them, the spring game, which is going to be indoors now.
Okay.
So I'll be heading over there and then watching the football, then go watch the rest of the baseball game. Basically, almost do what I'm
and catch some fights tonight. That's a pretty good Saturday.
If only I was able to pull off the Brody Miller special. He wound up going like 9 events in one day.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy.
You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station, and you're also listening to the producers on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
The producers on 103.7 The Game on a Louisiana Saturday morning. Now, back to the other side of the glass.
First pitch slammed. It's a base hit down the line in right field. This one going to the wall. Coming in to score is Cabrera. Broussard easily in to score. And a 2-RBI double gives the Tigers the lead back again, 8-6.
One of the many highlights of what was a very entertaining ball game to open up the series between LSU and Mizzou. And to get a look ahead at the series, game two moved up to 3 o'clock first pitch due to some inclement weather hitting Columbia, Missouri later on tonight. But, of course, there's some severe weather hitting the Acadiana area as well. I believe I just saw this pop up. Acadiana, Lafayette, Baton Rouge, a lot of areas in the state of Louisiana have an upgrade to an enhanced risk of severe weather Saturday. And it's definitely meaning like we got an enhanced risk of severe weather like tornadoes, a 30 to 45% chance of damaging winds and hail. So be safe on the roads if you happen to be out today. And now we're going to switch things up and go to the ARCO Equipment Hotline to talk LSU Mizzou baseball with Jack Perotti. He covers LSU Mizzou baseball for the Missourian. What's going on, Jack?
What's going on, man? Not too much. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming on because, trust me, it's been a wild last couple of days. Namely, last night. Was that the craziest start to a game you've ever seen? You have it's sort of 3-0 LSU, and then you have Zach Hess get pulled after 8 pitches due to a groin injury, and then it winds up being 6-3 just like that. How was that the craziest start to a game you've ever seen?
Honestly, it might have been. I mean, like, you see it took an hour to just finish the first inning in general. You know, you have Hess coming out, like, in the middle of the third at bat, and you have LSU going up 3, and then, you know, Mizzou's only scored, I think, 9 runs at the most in the SEC play, and then all of a sudden they put up 6 against one of the best in the entire conference. So it was just – it was odd. And, I mean, like, it didn't feel like either team was playing super well that inning, you know what I mean? It was kind of just – it was just an odd inning. It was very wild start to begin the game.
With such a roller coaster of emotions to open the game like that and then throughout the ball game and then Missouri coming out on the losing end, how does that, you know – affect their psyche going into today's matchup?
Yeah, you know, we spoke with Beezer last night, the head coach from Mizzou, and he was just preaching. He's like, you know, it's really great that we could put up 11 on LSU and, you know, fight back when, you know, they gave up those 8 unanswered runs to score 5 unanswered down to tie it up and go to extras. But at this point in time, you know, you can't just be happy with those moral victories. You got to go in there and you have to win these ball games. I mean, it's cool that, you know, you could have put up 11 runs against LSU. You know, those moral victories are great, but it's all about wins and losses in the SEC. And if you can't get it done, you can't get it done. So I think, I mean, I don't think it's really hurting the team too much right now from what I could tell from post game yesterday. But it really seems like today is a must win for Mizzou, especially with their ace, TJ Sikkim, on the mound.
LSU has a pretty left-handed dominant lineup. Missouri is going to counter that today with left-handed pitcher TJ Sikkimia. I'm not
Sikkima.
Sure. Sikkima.
Sikkima.
Give us a little bit of scouting report on Sikkima.
Yeah, Sikkima, I think, honestly, might be one of the most underrated arms in the SEC. He sits around low 90s with a fastball, kind of from like a three-quarter release, and just hums that thing in there. He's got a really great, he calls it a curveball, but it kind of looks more like a slurve slider kind of thing. That just, he can spot that up. When he's spotting that up in the fastball, like moving it in, out, up, down, he did last week against Kentucky, and he was virtually unhittable besides he gave up a couple solo shots. But other than that, he made literally no mistakes at all. And, I mean, when he's on, he's a tough guy to hit. So I think especially with all the left-handed bats in LSU's lineup, it could be a fortunate matchup for Mizzou. But, you know, it all depends on if he's feeling it, if he's on or not location. That's what it's all about for him.
Of course, it was a high-scoring matchup last night, talking right now with Jack Perotti of the Missourian. And just looking at kind of Mizzou's hitting the offense, which player will LSU's pitching staff have to get rid of early to wind up come away with that ball game and winning the series overall?
Yeah, I mean, Cameron Meisner, he's a potential top 10 draft pick. You know, big 5-tool guy, can hit for power, speed. Hits it all over the yard, but he hasn't played great in SEC play thus far. But I think he's obviously the big bat. You gotta limit. But another one, he's the guy that hits right in front of him. Chris Cornelius, hitting .336 so far this year, has a few bombs to his credit too, and he's a guy that can hit, just slap it gap to gap. So I think he's a really big guy. And you know, if you're gonna have success against Missouri, you're gonna have to get those guys out in front of Meisner and Zimmerman and those, you know, bigger hitters. So I think doing that, and that'll be very key. I think Cornelius and Meisner will be the two guys you really have to look out for.
And then, like, we talk about the severe weather that's going to be hitting the Acadian area. Of course, there's going to be a lot of bad weather coming towards Columbia, Missouri later on tonight. That's why the game's getting moved up to 3 o'clock. But what's the likelihood they can get all three in, especially tomorrow? I believe first pitch is at noon, correct?
Yeah, it's not looking likely from what I can tell. It looks like, you know, I was looking at the hourly forecast actually just coming on here. And it's looking like it's going to start pouring tonight and all day tomorrow until, you know, the late afternoon. And I don't know what LSU's travel schedule is, but I know it's around a 12-hour drive or so. That's not a short one. So, it might just be a two-game series where, either winner takes two or they split, So I think, especially with the weather in Missouri, it gets bad really quick. So we will see. I don't think a game, if I had to put my money on it, I don't think a game's going to be played tomorrow.
Yes. So you're saying that they drove in or did they fly or you don't know?
I'm not positive, but I mean, from what we've seen with SEC teams in Columbia so far, they've driven. Ole Miss drove here, and so did, I think, Kentucky did as well. And those are two further drives. So,
yeah, I think the biggest reason why I'm saying it probably won't happen is because of the fact that it feels like, especially the fact that it is a noon first pitch, you would think that kind of game typically is you have a in game time, you have a time where it's like you can't start an inning later than, let's say, like 4 o'clock. That way they can make their flight. That's at least what I was thinking.
Yeah, and that's actually Mizzou had that happen when they played Texas A&M a couple weeks ago. They were in College Station. They had to catch a bus ride to go to their flight, which is like a 2-hour bus ride just to go to Houston to get a flight. And, they had to end that game in the tie in extra innings because of that travel restrictions, which is a weird thing in college baseball, but that's college baseball for you. It's a little different, a little quirky, so.
Looking at Missouri's schedule, I mean, it was kind of up and down in the pre-conference slate, and then you open up conference where you get swept by Arkansas. But since then, I mean, you went 2 out of 3 against Ole Miss, who's tied for first place in the SEC West. And then, like you just mentioned, you kind of split 1-1 with Texas A&M with the other game ending in a tie. Then taking 2 out of 3 from Kentucky. What was the turning point coming into conference play for this Missouri team?
I don't know if there was a specific turning point exactly, but, the bullpen and the pitching staff was really struggling the first couple weeks in non-conference play. I think they were just really trying to figure themselves out. And then once they did that, man, they got on a roll. And the hitting has been kind of iffy this year, all throughout. But once the pitching staff really started, they started to lock down who they wanted as their top three starters. They wanted Sikkim on the plate. They knew that, but they didn't have a third starter. And that's where Jacob Candleberry, junior college transfer, he had a 2.60 ERA going into yesterday's game. Kind of got roughed up against LSU, but he's been a stud this entire year. Been a really good find for Missouri. And then, you got guys in the bullpen, like you got Cameron Dooley. It's actually looking a lot deeper and more talented than it did at the beginning of the year. And they're blowing leads against Northeastern and North Florida. And you're just looking at it like, wow, it was just confusing. Now they've all figured that out. And I think that's been a big turning point for this team, is they bank on their pitching. And, they play a lot of small ball because they know that their team's usually not going to give up a lot of runs. And they've been capitalizing on that a lot. So I think it's been kind of like a Royals brand of baseball that they played when they won that World Series in 2015, if that makes sense.
You always hear that Columbia is such a difficult place to play, too. I mean, look, you guys are 14-3 at home so far this year. What makes that place so unique and difficult to play at?
Man, well, it's the highest point in Columbia. So it's on top of a hill right off campus. And just the wind comes in, or it's just always blowing hard no matter what the day is. So you really got to check what the flags are. And, if the wind's blowing out, it makes for a lot of homers and fun baseball. I mean, you saw last night, I forget who it was in LSU, but he had just like kind of a solid pop up, but the wind was carrying out to right, and he had it for a 2-run bomb. So that helps. But a lot of the times the wind's blowing in. So those power hitting teams really can't capitalize on that. And Mizzou's not a power hitting team in general. So that's where it plays to their strengths and their pitching, to where it really favors a team that can just hit solid line drives. You saw that with LSU last night too. I mean, in that I think it was the 5-run third inning they had, they were just hitting gappers and liners all day there. So that was, that's where it favors them. And that's, I think, when Mizzou faces a team that can hit line drives and pitch as well as they can, it's tough. But, usually Mizzou has come out on top in those kind of big games. That's why it's a little more difficult here to play in Columbia.
Jack, thanks so much for coming on, my man. We'll talk to you down the road.
All righty. Have a good one, man.
All right. That was Jack Perotti of the Missourian. Excuse me. There we go. Just kind of turned my mic off accidentally.
Good stuff there, man.
You follow him on Twitter at Jack_Perotti.
Yeah, Missouri's been such an interesting team, as you just heard, kind of up and down. But they've been so good over the last 3 weeks. LSU maybe could close out the series win today with Cole Henry going on the bump.
It's just weird as hell to kind of have a series in with a split. I know a couple years ago that happened with the Cajuns. I believe that was a series. Do you think it's App State or Coastal Carolina 1 year where they had to split?
Yeah, it was Coastal, and they were actually leading in that third game.
And then they want to be tied.
Yeah.
Further reason why I think Coastal Carolina and North Carolina and
App State. I could school you on Cajun's info, man.
Well, like this is like 2 years ago, so I couldn't like 100% remember exactly who it was. Okay, man. Like,
all right,
I just remember it was during the Louisiana Open, bit, and I was out there covering that as well. So yeah, like having to do all that, it's like yeah, I don't necessarily remember all of it.
Oh, but yeah, you hope they could get both games in. I'm not a big fan of the seven-inning games, but it's really important to finish, especially in these conference series.
But
I was kind of hoping they might try to go two today, but, you know, there's chance of rain today as well. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's chance of rain late tonight. I think that's a big reason why they want to at least get two in. And I think if you don't get the other one in, it is what it is. Like, because of the fact that
– I'm almost 100% sure LSU flew in.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you would think, like – like Missouri, that's like about like a 12-hour drive. But you would think like you'd fly there. It's like you fly there, you come back. I wouldn't be surprised. Again, I have no outright idea, but, you know, I can probably wind up saying with confidence that we see this happen. Like we see what happens with
sometimes
LSU
these things just work its way out, right? It'd be really odd, you know, unfortunate for a team to have two series they get cut short. So Missouri already had one, so maybe the odds are in the favor to get it.
Well, Mizzou just got like split.
It was 1-1-1, right?
Yeah,
and that game was in the 10th when they had to call it, I believe, 2-2.
Yeah, well, like I said, it's like the way the NCAA rules are. It's basically if you can't get that game in, you can't start a new inning after, like if LSU starting at 12,
it's conference.
Yeah, well,
right? Conference has their own rules.
Well, I think it's either conference or. Like, I think it's just a general rule that, especially if it's, like, a long distance, like let's say, because I know we had the issue. I think
traveling over a certain distance is what you're saying?
Bingo. Okay. Like I said, it happened earlier this year with the Cajuns App State where they had a drop, they had a end game at, like, 4 o'clock. Like, that was the
hard stop.
Not hard stop. Basically, you can't start
an inning
after that.
Okay.
Yeah. That's kind of the rule I believe the NCAA has. It's all about kind of your distance. If you're having to, like, fly, basically, you might need to just kind of have it start earlier. That way you can wrap it up before that certain time. That way you can then catch their flight out of there. I know with Cajun South Alabama, it doesn't necessarily matter. But whenever it comes to an App State or Coastal Carolina coming or going, that's where your issue is going to arise because, well, Coastal Carolina, App State, they're far away from most teams in the Sun Belt.
Well, I think also LSU really wants to get this game done because it's pretty important for the season.
I mean, you're tied for first right now in the SEC.
You're right there. And after losing to Southern on Tuesday night to get that bad taste out your mouth.
Midweek games don't matter, Blaine.
When you almost get no hit, I mean, that messes with your confidence, Clinton, to get going.
Oh, yeah,
so
no.
It was really good to see them get out on a strong start last night and to carry it through.
Yeah. But like I said, midweek games don't matter when it comes to LSU. Cajuns? It does matter a lot more.
Well, I mean, when you're
going to. It just means more.
You know, you're going to play SEC teams on the weekend, and your RPI is not going to get.
Oh, no. Your RPI is going to be, like, through the roof, especially when you've done what you've done the last couple weeks against the Texas A&M, Mississippi State. I think there's a lot of great positives when you look at LSU's RPI right now. I haven't looked at it, but I'm almost certain it's probably towards the top of the country, right?
Yeah, I believe it's pretty high. If you give me 1 second,
I'll pull it up right here.
They're number 8 right now in the RPI. Strength of schedule is number 4 in the country. So,
and that's, like I said, that's a big reason why the SEC, it just means more, and that's why these midweek games don't matter. In the words of The Rock, it doesn't matter where they're at in the RPI rankings. In fact, I've seen at 9th. They were previously at 8th for some reason or another. Like I said, this is from the official NCAA website, I believe this was updated like through April 11th. So, like I said, I don't have the live up. That might be like a warm.
Oh, okay. I'm on the D1Baseball.com, so that's probably
there. We go, yeah.
But they do play the Raging Cajuns on a Tuesday night, yeah, over at the Wally Pontiff Classic in Medellin.
The last time for a while, at least, because I believe it's gonna be LSU and Tulane after this year.
And then quick turnaround, they welcome the Florida Gators into the box.
Yeah, that's what happens whenever you have like Easter the next week.
That's true. And Florida's not quite as dominant as they've been in the past, like young ball club.
But they're still a good team.
Yeah, they're still Florida.
They're still a good team, and that's going to be a big reason why. Like, I can't wait to see that matchup go down. We're going to take a quick commercial break, come back with a whole lot more. You are listening to the producers live for the 237 Roof Studios, as always. And we're going to take a quick commercial break, come back with more right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7TheGame.com.
Now, returning to the only show bringing you weekly appearances from the Coach Foe. Clint may have to step out when he gets here. They really don't like each other. It's the producers on 103.7 The Game.
No, it's all good. You know, accidents happen. I've had galleries run over me. It's just, you know, when you play in front of a lot of people, things happen.
You looked like a second baseman that was having a double play broken up.
Yeah, that's where it goes. But it's all good.
Man, that was probably the most, like, crazy thing I've seen in a while. Yesterday, during the Masters, a security guard, I honestly don't know what you would actually call that guy. I believe security guard would be the proper term, trips up Tiger Woods.
Try to get in there and block everybody. And ends up almost tripping Tiger. And
I think that was Grayson Allen as one of the security guards. He's had to do something during the offseason,
I mean,
right?
They might have clicked heels a little bit, but I don't think he fully got Tiger. I think it was a little
dramatic. Oh, no. It was just accidental. You know, it is what it is. But still, like, that's like you don't see that hardly at all in golf. You know,
and it has to happen to him, right?
It has to happen to him when everybody's.
How great is it, though, that he's one shot back?
It's amazing to see what he's doing right now. But it's. It's even more incredible to see like how like tight the leaderboard
is right
now.
I'm about to say, that's what makes it even more exciting to me is how close everybody is. It's going to make just a great next 2 days at Augusta. They're going to be battling some weather as well. But, I mean, today on moving day, if somebody's really going to separate themselves, or we're going to go in Sunday with, you know, just a bunched up leaderboard. Just makes for great TV, especially with Tiger Woods in the mix.
Biggest surprise, the bunched up leaderboard or the fact that Justin Rose, the number one golfer in the world, is out of the tournament.
He's out of the tournament.
I mean, don't you think that's crazy? The number one golfer in the world is out of the tourney.
They've started already, for what it's worth. I mean, it's guys way in the, you know, way back.
Yeah, like I guess you'll be
the closest anybody that's teed off already. They're at one under these guys. So
The main events won't be really starting until a little after noon. I know my Rahm's going to be teeing off at 12:55, but of course
that's who I went.
Oh,
with the pick'em.
You did?
I went John Rahm. Yes,
John Rahm. I mean, like I said, I can't believe you didn't go with the Big Cat.
I thought about going with Jason Day. He's another favorite of mine, but I did go with John Rahm.
No, I'm just saying, I'm amazed you didn't go with Tiger on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I figure a lot of folks would go with Tiger. So.
I mean, you would think like a lot of people would go with Tiger, some because of the fact that there's a lot of hype surrounding him. Like, I feel like when you look at that, like the list right now, everybody's tied. Brooks Koepka, you brought up Jason Day, Francesco Molinari.
He's always up there in the majors.
Yeah, but he's a guy that's like under the radar good.
And Brooks Koepka, how great is he in majors, like, in the last 2 years? He's always in.
Yeah, I think this one's even more impressive because
he missed the Masters last year with injury, if you remember.
Yeah, but I think the biggest thing that's impressive is the fact that he's, you've heard it, everybody's talking about how he lost, like, all this weight. Apparently, he wasn't able to.
He posted that picture with his girlfriend.
Yeah, all because of for the body issue. I'm like, come on, man.
You know the picture I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. But like I said, the dude just, like, has lost all this weight and is still able to kind of like perform at a very high level. When you look at Brooks Koepka,
is that why you and I are afraid to lose weight? Are you afraid we wouldn't be able to perform at this level?
I think we still could. I think we still could. You know, mind you, like, I mean, we're not super heavyweights, so
no.
I think we're still good.
We're definitely heavyweights, though.
I think we're definitely. I would probably be classified more welterweight. Like nearing heavyweight.
Okay.
What about you? You'd be heavyweight.
I'm heavyweight, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Meanwhile, Rusty is my. I'm trying to think of my sumo wrestling terminology because I think Rusty wouldn't be able to go in like a box. He'd be more sumo.
Yeah, he would have to do the sumo, I'm pretty sure.
Well, when we take a break, I'll figure out like what it would wind up being hypothetically because it's not Akebono because this is an actual that's an actual guy that was a sumo wrestler.
You know way too much about that sport than I do.
That's all I know is Akebono. And I'm a Yokozuna, but that was WWF. That was a pro wrestler. 20 by 20 Progress podcast every Wednesday. We drop that. And that's always fun to talk about.
Speaking of WrestleMania last week.
That was amazing. Like, that was probably one of the best WrestleManias I've seen in a while. Top to bottom, the card was really good. Sure, the triple threat, I didn't like the way I didn't like the fact that it was a triple threat. One-on-one should have been the main event. I'm sorry, but Charlotte Flair did not belong in that at all.
What was your biggest surprise?
Kofi Kingston winning.
Yeah? Okay.
I think that would be his...
What kicks did Kofi wear?
He wore these, like, very... Ah, crap. There's a video on my YouTube about it.
Okay.
It was like some Nikes that was, like, specially designed for
Jordans
him.
Jordans or... Okay, so...
No, it was some... Ah, damn it.
I heard he was thinking about going with the self-lace.
No, yeah, it was self-lacing. Okay. Like I said, I'll show you the video when we take a break.
All right.
You're listening to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game at 103.7thegame.com.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette, this is Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. Streaming live on 103.7thegame.com and on the 103.7 The Game mobile app. It's game day, and we're going behind the glass with the famous CD.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal.
The new guy, Blaine Viator.
Hey,
Cody Shoots. It's the producers on 103.7 The Game.
Hey, I heard you missed us. We're back.
Welcome back to hour number two of the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game at 103.7thegame.com, the must-listen to Saturday morning sports talk show in Acadiana, and I'd probably say the entire damn state. Hopefully you have a great Saturday so far. I know the weather outside a little less than ideal, but it is what it is. Hopefully you're still enjoying it. Nonetheless, whatever you wind up doing, I'd say probably wind up staying in, watch some of the Masters, a tradition unlike any other. But of course, there's a lot more going on than just that. We've got the NBA playoffs starting tonight. It definitely seems like it's going to be interesting. And I want to get your thoughts on what's going on with the playoffs as well, Blaine, in this segment. Because, like I said, I want to kind of just get through the first round of the playoffs and give my picks here.
I don't know. NBA playoffs are so drawn out. It's almost like wake me up in the second round.
I think for you, probably wake you up in the conference finals.
Yeah, kind of.
We can say the same thing about the NHL playoffs, which started a few nights ago.
Yeah. I didn't realize they started playoffs.
Yeah, they started.
I'm going to go with the Tampa Bay Lightning as my pick for the Stanley Cup. Is that a good pick?
I mean, they're in the playoffs, so I guess okay. you're starting off well.
All right.
I'll pull that up in a second, because like I said, it's the NHL playoffs started, I believe it was like Tuesday night they started, and right now I'd say, trying to see what the Lightning did, because I think the Lightning played last night, they played last night. They lead 2-0. They're down 2-0 against the Columbus Blue Jackets. So not looking good for your Lightning right now.
Okay,
I thought you would have wanted going the Preds.
Nah, I'm gonna go with the Lightning. I don't know. They're in the South. There,
I guess
Tampa's good stuff.
The Preds are in the South.
Yeah, Nashville, right?
Yeah, Smashville, bro. But like I said,
looking at the NBA playoffs, though, man.
Yeah.
What upset do you like in the first round?
Upset? I like in the first round? I got to go Brooklyn. Brooklyn would be wind up being an upset there for me.
You like Brooklyn over Philly?
Largely because of Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid, you don't know if he's going to wind up being like truly healthy for the entire 7-game series. He could be out tonight in game one with a knee injury. If it wasn't for that knee injury, I'd probably say Philly wins that one in 5. But I feel like Brooklyn has every chance to wind up making it a competitive series. And it comes down to game 7. And then you look at, I think
Thunder has a good shot of beating Trailblazers.
I feel like that's not even like a...
That's not even a true upset,
it's an
right?
upset, but not an upset. It's like when you see an 8 beat a 9 in the NCAA tournament. You're like, okay, we can see that.
Do you think Houston has any trouble with Utah?
I don't think
so. With their current form.
I think Utah will give them trouble, but I feel like they want to pull it away and winning that series in 6. There's 3 sweeps in this series. I think you know one of them, the Warriors. I'm sorry, Detroit, the Pistons. Rasheed Wallace ain't walking through that door. Milwaukee's sweeping that series. The Bucks are taking over that one. And then Toronto sweeps Orlando. And I just because Orlando feels like a team that's not even supposed to be there, but they are.
That's what happens when you have so many teams in the playoffs and the league's so watered down.
Well, no, it's the Eastern Conference is so weird now.
The whole league in general.
The whole league in general is top heavy, but I feel like the Eastern Conference is a lot more competition because
it's a lot more parity in the Eastern Conference.
Because now you don't have LeBron James in there.
Yeah.
That's why I say move the Pelicans over to the Eastern Conference. I'm just saying, move the Pelicans over there and your troubles are taken care of. It's the opposite of what happened whenever you moved the Astros from the NL to the AL. This could be an immediate payoff and winds up making the conference a lot better because the Pelicans, I feel like they are stuck in a conference that's too heavy.
You talk about the East is watered down. Who you have coming out the East?
I got to go. Man, it's tough, but I'm going to wind up going Milwaukee here. I feel like the Bucks have everything in place, and they can wind up having a relatively easy road into the finals.
Giannis over Harden for MVP?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yes, Giannis, sure. Giannis over Harden MVP. Because Harden shoots way too much, man.
Right.
Harden's
didn't
way
play defense.
Well, I think that's the entire league, let's be honest. Yeah. But like I said, I feel like Giannis Antetokounmpo is the guy that definitely deserves the shot at being the guy in the NBA, and he deserves the MVP more than I feel like Harden, because Harden has like pieces around him. Giannis is, I think, for the most part, doing it himself, doing his way.
I see that. He's also playing in the East, which is, like you mentioned, a lot more watered down than the West. And I'm assuming you have Golden State.
Yeah, of course. I mean, like I said,
Golden State and Houston in the conference finals? Or
yeah, it's got to be the Rockets. I would love to see Golden State Thunder,
Milwaukee,
but
Boston or Milwaukee, Philly?
I think Milwaukee, Boston. I feel like Brooklyn has a chance to upset, but I got Philly in seven. It's larger, like I said, the game seven, I don't know which way it's going to wind up going. All dependent, again, on how Joel Embiid plays, if at all, in this series. Because I feel like,
but I mean, if he's healthy, though, 76ers have
every shot to make the finals.
The East, right?
They have every shot to make the NBA finals. That would wind up being huge for the franchise. Because we talk about it, trust the process. They have everything in place to really make that a true statement, and they can wind up winning that one in seven. Boston, I got them winning in seven games. Because I feel like whoever when you come out of that one, you're going to be coming out of that one exhausted as hell, regardless of who you face off against, and all the other teams are going to be pretty fresh. Because, again, in the Eastern Conference, they have two teams sweeping because they're playing relatively, like, lower-class teams. And that's a big against Orlando, especially in the East versus the West.
I mean, the Clippers finished the season 9 games ahead of the Sacramento Kings to make the playoffs. I mean,
Clippers are surprisingly good now. It's weird.
Yeah, I wouldn't say they're good.
But I'm saying that they made the playoffs.
Yeah, they did.
I'm saying that's good enough for me, especially considering how much of a dumpster fire the Clippers had been over the past like 5 years.
Fair enough.
And same thing with the Kings. By the way, the Kings just need to stop like firing head coaches and maybe look inside and figure out like, oh hey, who's screwing it up the most? Because my God, they keep like getting rid of head coaches left and right. It's amazing to see how much like turnover ratio they have on that end. Because I feel like they've gone through like 7 coaches in the last like 5 years.
All recycles too, right? That's how the NBA operates.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're gonna wind up having Luke Walton go over to Sacramento before long. I'm being serious.
No, I mean, I think Luke Walton's gonna have a job next year somewhere, right?
Oh yeah, no, he's gonna be the Sacramento Kings. I almost guarantee you that. And then you've got, I mean, we're talking about like new coaching hires. You got to think, like, I was watching the 4Letter Network this morning, just had it on in the background. All of a sudden, I hear them saying Ty Lue or Monty Williams being the head coach of the Lakers. Which one would you rather?
Give me Ty Lue.
You'd rather Ty Lue?
Yeah,
I'm down with that.
Because I think he meshes well with.
Well, he has experience with LeBron. Yeah. I'm sure that's LeBron's guy because guess what? LeBron likes guys that let him be him and let him be the diva and let him control everything despite not being like listed as the player / coach / GM / owner.
Just hire LeBron.
What?
Just hire LeBron.
Well, no, I think that would probably be considered like tampering or whatever.
Well,
like,
look, the playoffs are going to start today, right? And today is what? April the 13th?
Yeah, 13th.
The first round doesn't end until April the 28th.
Well, that's when it's like supposed to end. Of course, you got probably
sweeps and whatnot. But
yeah, like I said, you're having at least like three sweeps in the series.
It's so drawn out. It's almost exhausting, especially in these first rounds, especially in the Western Conference, where you know you're going to have a lot of lopsided matchups, and the East has a lot more parity than the West does, but it's still just not enough to get people real excited about the NBA playoffs until the second round.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you right there because, man, it's just tough, man, to kind of like get hyped up for an entire season, especially with the way how long
it
is.
Would it be better if they shortened the season?
I think that's what they're going to wind up doing because according to what I was hearing from Adam Silver,
less is more in this situation.
Less is definitely more in this situation. Let's go to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. We've got Jay on the line. What's going on, Jay?
What do you say, Jay?
Hi. I disagree with you on this whole LeBron diva talk. I just heard someone mention. The reason Ty Lue, it's not about letting LeBron be LeBron. Ty Lue holds LeBron accountable. Ty Lue's going to get in his face and let him know, hey, you need to work hard on defense. You need to do this. You need to do that. A lot of other coaches wouldn't do that because of who he is. That's been reports that Ty Lue was standing up against LeBron. And that's what,
it is because LeBron respects him, though, right?
Yeah, but guess what? You have to earn respect. You're not, I'm sure that after he came at LeBron, like, okay, because it's a situation when he went to Miami. He couldn't just run that situation like he did in Cleveland because Pat Riley wasn't going to play that, And Ty Lue, he also played in the league. Yeah, I just think Lue Walton just wasn't going to check LeBron, man, like a Ty Lue would, Now, I think Ty Lue would be a great coach for him. Hopefully, Monty Williams, he deserves a job somewhere in this league. He does. But I don't know. What's y'all take on the Griffin hire? I'm just tuning in. Sorry.
I think it's a huge hire. I think it's going to pay dividends for you.
It's absolutely genius. We opened up the first hour of the show with it because I felt like that was probably the thing.
I'm sorry.
It's all good, man. Sometimes people just jump in at different times. That's the benefit of being able to listen to us on demand through 1037thegame.com. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, whatever podcast gimmick you have. That way, if you miss anything, you can hear our takes on it. But here's a too-long didn't-read version or didn't-listen version. This is a huge hire because of the fact that David Griffin's a guy that knows what he wants to do with Anthony Davis in terms of trading him, possibly to the Boston Celtics, and be able to get true value for him and get that return on investment. And then possibly, you would hope, because you're number 7th right now in the lottery, you wind up being able to get a solid player or maybe trade up just a little bit more because you have a 26% chance of getting the number 4, getting into the top 4, and then you can probably wind up trading your way up to number 2 because that seems where the majority of people say Ja Morant's going.
And it's also a great hire because he's proven he could put teams together like he's had in the past and win championships.
Yeah, I'm curious to see who's going to hire, who's going to be the next head coach of this team. Yeah, that's all I just wanted to say. I think Ty Lue he will work out with the Lakers. Matter of fact, he's an old Laker. I think so. That's another thing.
True.
He used to play with the team.
Yeah.
So sometimes you know how that franchise could be. All right, thank y'all.
Appreciate the call.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Jay. We finally got a call on the show.
Ty Lue, though, being a former Laker, being LeBron's coach in the past, I think he is a guy that just kind of fits in with that organization. And look, the Lakers are going to contend within the next couple of years. You know that with LeBron James there, they're going to go out and get pieces that he needs around them, and they're going to contend for a championship in the next 2 to 3 years. It's just about who the coach is going to be and who the pieces are going to be around them. At this point, I don't see it being Anthony Davis, but time will just tell.
All right, let's hurry up and get to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Jermaine on the line. What's going on, man?
Oh, not much. I want to kind of chime in about the MVP race between Harden and Giannis. I think Giannis had a great year, but, you can't take it from Harden. He's played a lot much better defense than he has been. He's first in tip passes, second in steals. He's averaging almost 10 points a game, averaging 36 points a game more than Giannis. Giannis' lack of a perimeter game really doesn't benefit him in that way. Harden's a much better passer than Giannis, much better playmaker, great shooter. It's a close race, but I think Harden got it.
I like, I like, I like, I, mean, I guess,
I,
it,
I like
the Harden's just more the fact that he shot so much. I think that definitely hurts, at least from my opinion, his chances of winning it. And I feel like Giannis definitely deserves it because he's not working with as many pieces Harden is.
That's the biggest key for me is though Giannis has kind of put his team on its back by himself and won his regular season division crown. So I'm going to go Giannis.
I agree with that, but just think, if Harden, with Chris Paul and Capella being out, Harden had to carry the offensive load. And if he didn't, they wouldn't have made the playoffs, not in the West.
I appreciate the call, Jermaine. We gotta move it on down the line because I got one more in front of us before we take a commercial break. But yeah, like I said, again, it just feels like Giannis is the guy. But we're going to move over to the ARCO Equipment Hotline. He's usually the first guy to start off the 11 o'clock hour, but we got to tee it up before we take a quick commercial break or tee it up before we take a T.O. And that's T. What's going on, my good brother?
Hey, how y'all doing, guys?
We're great.
Doing good, man.
Good, good. Now, I got a question for y'all. I know we're not on LSU baseball right now in this segment, but
don't mind at all, man.
I just want to ask y'all. Okay. How could Paul Maneri recruit 10, 12 left-handed batters, hitters, and not one left-handed pitcher?
Well, they did have a couple guys, and the problem with left-handed pitchers are if you're really good and you can hum it from the left side, you're going early in the major league draft. So the draft kind of hurt Paul Maneri in those chances. Left-handed pitching is at a much more of a premium with the NBA draft scouts than right-handed pitching.
I got you. As far as for the pitching staff, Cole Henry is the best pitcher on the staff.
Oh, he's been phenomenal lately.
I honestly think that this team, Cole Henry is the gem of this pitching staff, no doubt. But I think the key for this team is getting Jaden Hill back healthy. I think he needs to give them something down the stretch. If they could get him healthy, I think sky's the limit for this team.
Any word on Nick Storff?
I mean, he was on the bump last weekend practicing, so I wouldn't be surprised if we see him in the next couple of
weeks. From now, it's going to be the target date just to get him, maybe an inning or two. But I'm at the point, I got to see it to believe it. We've been hearing about Nick Storff for quite some time. I got to see him in live action.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if we see him like a midweek game because obviously, definitely not Cajuns next Tuesday, but maybe one down the line.
I got you. Hey, guys, love y'all show, man. Enjoy y'all weekend.
Appreciate it, T.
We got to take a quick commercial break. Coming up next, James Yasko, AstrosCounty.com, Lima Time. Coming up next.
Hi, this is Don Allen, inviting you to listen to Five Guys Stories and Lies for the honest truth behind Acadiana's...
Your Saturday morning never truly gets started until the producers take over the airwaves.
Like it or not, we are taking over.
Now let's get back to Blaine, Clint, and Cody.
And Altuve drives this one deep to left field, and you can kiss it goodbye. And go ahead, grand slam for Jose Altuve. And the Astros go on top for the first time tonight. They lead it 6-3. How do you like that?
I think you have to like that from the Astros. Couple of grand salamis to help them come away with a big win to open up the series against the Seattle Mariners. More importantly, 7 straight wins. And to talk about it, we got to go over to the ARCO Equipment Hotline with some quickness. Talk with our guy, James Yasko, AstrosCounty.com and the Lima Time podcast. What is going on, brother?
Hey, what's up?
Not too much, man. Not too much on a wonderful Saturday morning. And was it the perfect time to have a homestand or what to kind of get things going and win 6 straight? Now it's 7 straight after the way they wound up taking down the Seattle Mariners. But it was a great time to have a homestand after having a rough go on the road.
Yeah, and I can't remember if we were talking about it, that how weird it must have been to spend 6 weeks in Florida for spring training and then come home for 2 random, exhibition games against the Pirates and then go back out for a week-long road trip. So getting home must have felt pretty good because the 7-game winning streak, they're tearing the cover off the ball. So it was, I'm sure it was nice for them to get home and sort of get back to a normal regular season routine.
Yeah, and you're talking about like how this team has been hitting the cover off the ball. I think one guy in particular, Jose Altuve, was it last night his 5th home run in 4 games?
5 home runs in 4 games, 4 straight games. And he had never homered in 3 straight before, Wednesday's game, I guess? It's a nice little 4-game homer streak for him.
I mean, what we're seeing with Jose Altuve is just nothing short of incredible at this point in the season. But, of course, everybody else kind of getting things done, and we're seeing the pitching staff kind of get themselves out of the doldrums a little bit. Because, I mean, we look at Gerrit Cole. He wound up having – Gerrit Cole, his game's really weird where he was having these 1-0 ball games where the offense wasn't clicking, and he was the kind of the reason for the loss, largely because he allowed that one and only run.
Yeah, no, I mean, and the thing about Wade Miley had a quote after the game last night that he basically was like, man, it's pretty fun to be a pitcher on this team because the offense is so freaking good. So, you know, the offense gives the pitching staff a little bit of room for error. You know, the Astros are not going to hit as poorly as they did the first 7 games. They're probably not going to be they're not going to be able to hit for the rest of the season the way they have over the last 7 games, but somewhere in the middle is going to be just fine.
Talk right now with James Yasko, AstrosCounty.com, and the Lima Time podcast. And just looking at the rest of this series, this is probably going to be a big challenge for that pitching staff that we're talking about, is the fact that this is probably one of the – when you look at the Mariners, they are a heavy-hitting team. They wound up going, what was it, like 15 straight games with a home run, a MLB record. It just feels like the Mariners team, they're pretty much a big surprise right now in the league.
Yeah, I don't respect them. Excuse me, I don't respect the Mariners at all. So they're a trash organization, and they're not going to go to the playoffs this year. And sure, you know, they caught the Red Sox at the right time when they were really struggling, and then who have they played? The Royals, the White Sox. Like, I'm not impressed. I mean, it's good. They're winning games that they should, and they got some against Boston that probably when they meet again won't happen. So. You know, I think the Mariners are about to come back down to earth.
Who's a more trash organization, the Mariners or the Rangers?
Oh, the Rangers, absolutely, hands down. But you know, the Mariners hit a lot of home runs, but they don't have quite the same home run celebration the Rangers do. So there is that. But, yeah, neither of them, no respect at all.
Well, everything's been really great with the Astros, you know, in the last – 6 or 7 days. The one bad thing, though, is Alex Bregman. He left the game a couple nights ago with a little hamstring injury. Since then, he's been day-to-day. Says doctors didn't find anything wrong. When can we expect Bregman back in the lineup?
Apparently, it could be tonight. So it might just be a one game. You know, he got a couple days off. Didn't play last night. But apparently completed, you know, all the drills and running that he needed to before last night's game. So the word is that he'll be in the lineup tonight.
Well, that's excellent news. Looking at tonight's matchup, King Felix on the bump for the Mariners and Justin Verlander going for the Astros. You got to like the Astros' chances.
I mean, King Felix is one of the, you know, one of this generation's greatest pitchers, but certainly does not have the same stuff that I guess we were accustomed to earlier this decade. So. You've got to like your chances anytime Verlander's on the mound, but especially against Felix, it's a matchup you like to see.
Just this team's diversity. I mean, Bregman out, they're able to shuffle Uliel over to third base, play Diaz over at first. That has to give them so many options as the season goes down.
It does, and it gives Hinch a lot of flexibility, and I think that's the way that baseball is going. Although the Astros seem to be a little bit more aggressive in their. And, I mean, you know, Peacock, you know, threw 3.1 pretty solid innings last night, striking out 7. So, just everyone, it feels like everyone on this team will do whatever they can to help the team win. And I know that's something that you would like every athlete to say, but I don't think you see it quite as much as you do with the Astros.
James, thanks so much for coming on, my man. We'll talk to you down the road.
Hey, sounds good. Have a good weekend.
All right, that was James Yasko, AstrosCounty.com, Lima Time podcast. Follow him on Twitter at AstrosCounty. Got to take a quick commercial break. Coming up next, we got Dave Doyle talking UFC 236 on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
And Louis Oosthuizen. All eyes, of course, on Tiger Woods after a second round 68.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. We're going to step away from the Cajun spring game talk, the NFL draft talk, the Pelicans talk, and we're going to go over to the Octagon, one of my favorite places to go. And how can we not go to it, considering what today is? UFC 236 going down tonight inside the State Farm Arena, and one of Lafayette's own, Dustin the Diamond Poirier, is going to be going out against Max Holloway for the UFC Lightweight Championship, the interim at that. And then also, there's another Lafayette native we'll talk about in a little bit, but we got to get over to the Artco Equipment Hotline to talk to our guy, Dave Doyle, now of MMAJunkie.com, senior editor for that website, and the man covers UFC unlike any other. What is going on, man?
Hey, not much, man. How you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. After all, it is fight day, and my goodness, we've got a lot on tap. But before we get to UFC 236 going on tonight, we got to look over some of the bigger topics in the world of MMA, and that has obviously got to be, without a doubt, Conor McGregor and his retirement slash probably not really. What's your take on this whole thing?
Okay, first of all, there's 0% chance Conor is retiring. The UFC and Conor are at a bit of an impasse on, you know, matters like how much Conor's going to get paid and how strongly he's going to be billed now that he's no longer champion and has lost a couple of fights. And if you remember, Conor threatened retirement a few years ago, and it got the UFC's attention very quickly. So Conor tried to do that route again, and this time basically the UFC kind of called his bluff, because Conor, although he's still the most powerful guy in the game, he's not quite as bulletproof as he was a couple of years ago. So, you know, it's all a game going on between two very powerful people right now, and, you know, we'll end up seeing how it all plays out, but Conor's not at a point anymore where he can threaten retirement and, you know, everyone will meet his demand. So that's pretty much what happened there.
That is just amazing, seeing what's going on with Conor McGregor, everything that's happened over the last few months, or last few weeks, I should say, because all this has kind of happened rapid fire. Maybe, hopefully, he winds up coming back, because I'm almost certain he'll have a big fight kind of ready for him whenever he's ready to come back. That being said, the other big storyline coming out of the last couple weeks is DC Daniel Cormier and the rumor and innuendo surrounding a potential match with Brock Lesnar. Will it wind up happening or not?
It's all going to come down to whether Brock wants to or not. Brock, you know, Brock makes a lot of money in the WWE. I'm not calling wrestling fake in that, you know, obviously they take physical punishment doing what they do in wrestling, but it's not the same as getting punched in the face and your opponent actively trying to harm you. So, you know, maybe it'll happen. Maybe Brock has a habit of kind of flipping back and forth whenever it suits him. DC really wants that fight because he knows that it'll draw a big audience. So that's why he's pushing really hard for it. Again, it'll come down to, will the UFC pay Brock enough money to make it worth his while? Does Vince McMahon want to let Brock go again? It's all going to come down to whether Brock wants it or not.
That sounds about right. Talking right now with Dave Doyle, senior editor for MMAJunkie.com. The man, like I said, the man covers UFC like nobody else. That's why we have him on here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game. And now we got to talk about UFC 236. Before we get to the main event, for those in the Acadian area, they might know this name as well. Alan Joban, 16-6. He's going to be facing Beanie Siegel on the undercard. Before we get to Alan, is this actually Beanie Siegel the rapper or just some other guy entirely?
I'm sorry, Alan Joban's opponent?
Yes.
Alan Joban's fighting a guy named Dwight Grant, who's I think he's kind of a late replacement here.
Okay, there we go. I hadn't seen that, what I was looking at. I apologize for that one. But Dwight Grant, that's going to be an interesting fight. I mean, we're seeing Joban, a Lafayette native, going at it.
Yeah, it should be. Joban is a really exciting competitor. He's a kickboxer. He's a guy who likes to go. He's a guy that likes to put on exciting shows for the fans. And what we've seen as he's kind of gone along, because he's the type of fighter who will win 2-3 fights, get to a certain point, and then, you know, kind of slip up a little bit.
But what we're seeing is he's becoming a smarter fighter as he gets more experience. He's becoming a more refined fighter. He seems to be a little bit better at picking his spots and not leaving himself open. Allen is right on the cusp of being a really significant factor in the welterweight division. And Dwight Grant is a guy who, again, this is kind of a replacement opponent here, but he's a guy, he's a live underdog basically, so he should be a strong enough opponent to keep Allen honest and make him hustle. But I'd be very surprised if Allen didn't come out with the win here.
Talking right now with Dave Doyle, senior editor of MMAJunkie.com, and looking at the rest of the fight card, what other matchup kind of interests you? Main card, preliminary card, whatever kind of card you're looking at, what's the one that's interesting you the most heading into tonight?
I mean, you know, this is like a spot where I feel like I should pick some type of out of the way undercard fight, but the co-main event with Kelvin Gastelum and Israel Adesanya for the interim middleweight championship is just intrigues me on so many levels. One being that Kelvin is the type of guy who seems to be is as much of a cliche as it sounds like. When people count him out, that's when he puts in his best performances, going back all the way to when he was on The Ultimate Fighter and his opponent Uriah Hall had been anointed as just the next one, and Kelvin came out and, you know, just completely squashed that hype. And then he went up to middleweight where he's given up weight against guys and, just knocking off guys like Jacare Souza and Michael Bisping. So he's the guy who always seems to rise to the occasion when people count him out, and people are counting him out, I feel, in this fight against Adesanya, who actually might be the next one, the next big superstar. He has come onto the scene. He's kind of a next generation Anderson Silva type of fighter, and he won 5 UFC fights in the span of 12 months to get himself into this position. And, he comes at you with all sorts of unique angles and flashy strikes. And, I want to see what Kelvin can do if he can figure out the puzzle of Israel Adesanya in a way that no one else has yet. So it's really kind of a coin flip of a fight.
And now we're going to move over to the main event of UFC 236. Without a doubt, I think a lot of Acadian area fans of UFC are looking forward to this one. Max Holloway, Dustin Poirier, these two have faced off before, but that was quite a long time ago, back in 2012, on short notice at that, for Max Holloway. And Poirier wound up getting the submission win.
Yeah, I wouldn't put too much stock into that fight, in terms of who these two guys are. That fight, Max was 20 years old. He was a short notice replacement at the time. Dustin was already well established. To me, it's interesting to watch those clips, but it's interesting in the way that, if you've got, two NBA superstars and someone shows a film of them playing each other in high school, that's kind of what that fight kind of means now. Both of these guys have grown into, I mean, this is one of the very best fights you can put on at any weight class of mixed martial arts right now. Dustin has, I mean, I'm almost struggling to come up with the superlatives for just the way he has, his game has matured and the way he's become such an amazing all-around fighter, one who manages to mix being aggressive with also being smart. And, it's just his time. We've been watching him all the way since he was in the WEC almost a decade ago now. And just to watch where he's progressed from there to here, where he's coming into a fight where he has 3 straight stoppages over former world champions, and Anthony Pettis, Justin Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez. This is Dustin Poirier's time. Clearly, he has earned this spot. And yet, Max Holloway is phenomenal. Max Holloway is a tremendous fighter who's on a 13-fight winning streak. Just endless gas tank and go for days and days and days. And, the only thing I feel bad about this fight is that one of these guys has to lose, because they are such tremendous all-around competitors, pretty good guys, too, which isn't always the case in this business. Sit back and enjoy.
I think we all have to. You know, that's probably going to be one of the best fights of the year. I understand we're only in April, but I feel like that's going to be one of the better fights when we look back on it. But that being said, that's not even the biggest card of the year. He's already announced a while back several fights down the line for UFC 239. Is this going to be undoubtedly one of the biggest cards the UFC has put together in a while, with John Jones, Santos, Amanda Nunes, Holly Holm, Junior Dos Santos, and Ngannou? All these guys, it seems like it's going to be a lot of fun on July the 6th.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the UFC, the first week of July, they call it International Fight Week, and it has become the equivalent of the UFC Super Bowl over the years. And, you know, they haven't even announced the entire card yet. Those are just the fights you listed off of the ones that they've only announced so far. And, you know, in this case, John Jones is the type of guy who you would never bet against him until... Yeah, I wouldn't bet against him. And yet, Thiago Santos is absolutely just mauling people. And, you know, I mean, anyone has a puncher's chance. And Amanda Nunes against Holly Holm, I think that's the best women's fight that you can make right now. Amanda Nunes has defeated everyone in her path, won two championships, and Holly Holm is the last big name, basically, that she hasn't beaten. And Holly herself, Holly's resume speaks for itself. So, yeah, that and Ngannou Dos Santos is a title maker at heavyweight. And, it's one hell of a card they put together. And let's just knock on wood and hope that fights being advertised now actually make it to July.
Yeah, you have to agree. Talking right now with Dave Doyle of MMAJunkie.com. And, of course, the last time we talked to you, the UFC and ESPN deal was just kind of getting fresh. The ink was just drying. Now we've got a new deal going on with the UFC and ESPN with a $1.5 billion deal, to where ESPN is going to wind up having a lot of the coverage of UFC with their pay-per-views and simulcast of being on ESPN+. Plus, how big is that for the UFC to have that kind of setup where they don't have to worry about like a true network, if you will, to kind of handle their stuff? Or is this just kind of another means to an end?
This is going to tie back to the beginning of our conversation, because this is why when Conor McGregor said, "I'm retiring," Dana White was able to just say, "Oh, okay, you know, thanks for the memories, pal," and kind of call his bluff, because now the UFC has so much guaranteed money that, you know, the only people who really had any power over the UFC before were the really big established names who drove the pay-per-views, like Conor and Ronda Rousey, and before that, Anderson Silva, George St. Pierre, because the business was predicated on pay-per-view business that went up and down. Now they're getting, so the average amount of money that the UFC is getting per pay-per-view guaranteed from ESPN is the equivalent of a pay-per-view that draws a 500,000 buys. And there are only a handful of people who can draw that number. So this gives the UFC a lot of flexibility in terms of, again, I keep referring back to that Conor thing. Like, the UFC has more power to kind of dictate things. That's if you're a fan of fighters making money for what they do, for all they put out for the fans, like, maybe that's not the best thing. But, you know, in terms of the long-term viability of the brand, this means that the UFC isn't going away anytime soon. It also means that we're going to see quite a bit of the UFC. They're going to have a strong presence on ESPN proper, because, you know, ESPN, when the ESPN invests in something, ESPN promotes it. So, it's good for the long-term health of the brand, maybe not so much for the fighters themselves.
Dave, thanks so much for coming on, my man. We'll talk to you down the road. Hopefully, the next time we talk to you, it's before DC Brock.
You got it, my man. And, Lafayette, enjoy your hometown boy here, man. He's making your town proud.
He really is. He really is. Once again, thanks to Dave Doyle. Definitely somebody you need to follow if you love MMA and the UFC. And tonight, UFC 236, going to be an awesome show going down tonight. I believe the start of the fight card is going to be at 9 o'clock. We're going to go ahead and take a quick commercial break, wrap up the show in style. You're listening to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Let's begin now.
Welcome back to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Of course, it is time to kind of wrap things up in a nice little bow. We're going to have a fantastic day. I know the weather, not necessarily the best in the world, but I definitely think we're still going to have a pretty good weekend. At least I sure will. Hopefully you do as well. You're able to enjoy it. However you're going to wind up enjoying it, if you're going to the Cajun spring game, the Cajun baseball game, or better yet, you're just going to stay at home and watch a lot of the Masters. More power to you. And it's the last segment of the show. We always like to do a little something like pick'ems. And this is going to be in a similar vein, more or less. But I'm going to go ahead and give you my thoughts on some of the big things coming up this weekend in terms of games, tournaments, fights. I'll break it down for you a little different, because I'm usually going back and forth with Blaine. But I've been riding solo as of the last couple weeks, so I might as well just got to keep it rolling when it comes to the picks this weekend. And we got to start off looking at LSU-Mizzou. I say they win this afternoon, and that's going to be starting at 3 o'clock. It was originally going to be scheduled for 5 o'clock. I pushed up a couple hours. I am more than glad about that because, hey, you know, that means you'd enjoy some baseball. And you'd enjoy a little bit more of the Saturday night after LSU kind of wraps up. I know I'll definitely... we'll be looking forward to that. Probably going to wind up going to sleep for the first time in a while before like 1 a.m. And that's definitely a big positive, a big win on the board. That being said, I don't think they wind up getting Sunday in, because, of course, whenever it comes to this series against Mizzou, it's an 11:30 a.m. first pitch. And nothing's been announced yet, as far as I can tell, about a time change, anything shifting in the next couple of hours. But I wouldn't be surprised to see if anything has changed when it comes to a kind of the series winds up just changing overall. You wind up seeing it go to a doubleheader or what have you. Because I think with the Sunday game, the way it's set up and its current construct, that 11:30 pregame, I believe 12 o'clock first pitch, you've got to deal with that aspect of the game. And I don't, and you got to deal with that. It's probably going to wind up also being a change to the entire kind of schedule, if you will. You know, you've got to deal with that aspect as well. And I guess also you have to deal with the fact that it's probably going to wind up being a game that has a drop time. Like, you got to end it at this time to be able to get it in. Mizzou had that a couple weeks ago with Texas A&M. It wound up being a literal split because you tied that series. That could wind up looming large for LSU, because right now they're tied for first in the SEC. If they weren't, I probably wouldn't necessarily be as concerned about it. Cajuns, Jaguars. Cajuns take 2 out of 3 likely and might drop one today. But Brandon Young will be getting the start today, so I like their chances, but the offense needs to be able to set the game up in a big way. And then Jack Burke, he'll need to step up on Sunday. He wound up missing the final game last weekend due to illness. Hopefully he's 100% ready to go for Sunday, because if they don't, that might not look very good when they want to try and turn things around heading into that Wally Pontiff Classic on Tuesday. Astros Mariners, I think they take 2 out of 3. The bats will be a real test for the Astros. We talked about it with James Yasko earlier. I feel like that's going to be the ultimate test for the Astros, is to be able to stop those bats from kind of making a whole lot of noise. UFC 236, I got to go with the Diamond, Dustin the Diamond Poirier. He's going to wind up winning here, winning the UFC, the interim UFC lightweight title. Definitely going to be a lot of fun to watch in this fight. I think it's probably one of the best fights of the year up to this point, and I think it could definitely hold itself up as being one of those top fights of the year. And I would love to see Alan Jouban to win as well, but that one feels tough to kind of pick, because it is a guy they're going to want. He's going to wind up facing off with a late replacement. And those are always kind of tricky when it comes to picks. And then finally, I'm going to jump towards the most important game, the most relevant game in my mind, and that's Nets 76ers. I say Brooklyn takes game one, because it'll be a tough series. But and with Joel Embiid and his knee injury, you don't know which way that could wind up going. I got to wind up leaning towards our guy, our guys, the Brooklyn Nets. I got to lean towards them to wind up coming away with the win. Due to Joel Embiid possibly being out due to knee injury, I haven't seen anything official yet on his status, but I think that could wind up being something huge when it comes to the series as a whole, as I talked about at the top of the of this hour. We're out of here. Hope you have a great rest of your Saturday. I'm headed to the Cajun Spring Game, Cajuns Baseball, so have a great one, everybody. Be back with you next Saturday. You've been listening to the producers right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. LSU Baseball coming up, 3 o'clock first pitch, 2:30 pregame. Keep it locked. We're out.
Hey, Clavis, wake up. The show's over.
Oh, yeah. Kick it.